Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available 20-minute samples of recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new sample podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. In addition, you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost simply by becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We hope you enjoyed today's sample podcast.
Well, yeah, thank you for joining me. I'm really excited that mindfulness, I think Gaynor Yancey came up to me and she said, mindfulness is having its moment. And it's true. I was at NACSW last year, and there was one workshop, and I mean, it's been around. It has been around, but to be here at NACSW and see this interest, I'm really just very excited. I think what I hope I can sort of give you all is this, just thoughts about mindfulness and also some practical tools that you can walk away with. And so I'm going to try to do a lot of things in a short amount of time, so I apologize. I won't do justice for each one, but I do want to first really define mindfulness, kind of the thinking that I've done, especially I'm a doctoral student at Baylor, but I teach at Azusa. I've been a clinical social worker for over a decade, and just the thinking that goes along with all that, I want to share those thoughts. I want to give credit to Lisa Hosak, too. What I thought was really interesting about her workshop is that I didn't know much about her work and what she's been doing, but I went to her workshop, and what she's kind of thought about is so similar. And we didn't share notes. We didn't talk. And so I think we're on to something when we talk about this Christian integration of mindfulness. So the fact that there are two separate people kind of doing this work, we're coming to similar conclusions, I hope will be sort of encouraging for you. I also want to lower the standards and expectations about this quantitative study that I'm still in the middle of. I have very, very preliminary results. I don't have anything worthy of any kind of real implications just yet, but I think there will be. So I do hope I want to put that out there, and because I'm still in the middle of it, and I'm excited about what's happening and the numbers I'm getting, but I just want a few more numbers. So those are my qualifiers. I'm hoping that we can, you know, do discussion and all that too. So please feel free to interrupt me at any point. I'm happy to answer or clarify. Okay. I'm Regina. I teach at Azusa. I teach Field, which I think is a lovely way to keep one's foot in the practice, in the practice world. And then I get to do the research. So I really enjoyed mindfulness because it's allowed me to do that. Okay, so two definitions of mindfulness. First, it really is a theoretical philosophy that comes out of Buddhism. So in Buddhism, there's lots of different schools of Buddhism. So I want to be clear, when I talk about Buddhism, it's like talking about Christianity. There's so many different schools, so many different lenses. But so I'm going to paint with a broad brush and just say that mindfulness comes out of the Eightfold Path. Okay, so out of the Eightfold Path is a concept called mindfulness. And this is the definition that I've sort of offered. It's hard to translate these things, as you know, because first of all, these are like Eastern religious traditions, either in Japan or China, and these words don't always translate well. But it is about present moment attention, non-judgment, observation. And so the way we've defined it in America, I think, is a little different than if you were to go to Thailand, or if you're a Zen Buddhist in Japan, or if you're a Mahayana Buddhist in China. And I won't go into those details, but I'm happy to answer those questions because I've done some religious studies in those traditions as well to kind of compare and contrast. It's a theoretical concept, but it's also a practice. And so that's really the rub. You know, when you get a philosophy and then you turn it into a practice, there's a lot of questions that come out of that. But I do want to say that I think what mindfulness in general offers is a practice that we can both use professionally and personally as social workers. I think it's powerful, and the results are in the literature, and I'll share those with you next. I do want to stop there, though, first and ask if you have any questions, particularly about these first concepts, the sort of theoretical religious philosophy versus its practice. Okay, we're comfortable with that?
A little bit about the Eightfold Path.
Yes. Yeah, so in Buddhism, and it depends kind of if you're, there's two traditions, Theravada Buddhism, which is more Southeast Asia. So we're talking about Thailand, Laos, Cambodia. And then you have Mahayana Buddhism, which is Japan and China and Korea. And so they'll tell you different things. But the Eightfold Path is the way to, they wouldn't call it salvation, they call it nirvana. But it's enlightenment. But that is the path. So it's things like kindness, mindfulness, right thinking, right behavior. So it's, again, it's a religious philosophy. It really anchors the behavior part of the religion. I can go into that more, but even if you Google search an image, Eightfold Path, you'll get this really cool image that kind of shows you this wheel of how Buddhists think about the path to nirvana. Yes?
So, some Christians are uncomfortable with practices that emerge from other religious traditions.
Yes.
I don't know, is that something you're going to get to later?
I'm going to get into that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that Christians, we have a very ancient tradition that we can draw from. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to choose this path, but
sure.
People do often choose this path in clinical social work.
Sure.
But as Christians, I think, you know, we can decide mm-hmm. what we want to do. I'm not going to tell you what that means, you know, what you should do, kind of going back to Helen Harris's, I'm not going to tell you the shoulds, I'm just going to tell you the questions and,
sure.
and the principles. So here's a scattering of research. I mean, I could go on, if you went to Lisa Hosek's presentation as well, she had a list of folks, and she did this nice engram of showing in Google search, if you put in mindfulness, how in the last 10 years, it's the research has sort of just exploded. But really, just talking about, I'm going to put it under emotion instead of just mental health, but neurological studies have been done, and that really shows how mindfulness can help improve attention, attunement, concentration, decision-making capacity, which, as you can think about as social workers, if you're in the heat of a moment, you've got 10 cases that you've got to see. If you can do a mindful practice, if it can help you with concentration and attention, that could be really helpful. DBT, CBT, and BCT stands for dialectical behavioral therapy. That comes out of Marshall Linehan's work. I'm sorry, that should say ACT, not CBT. ACT instead of CBT, which is acceptance and commitment therapy, as well as mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. These things have been shown to be useful in a variety of conditions, stress, particularly depression, anxiety, OCD, PTSD. These are some of a smattering of references, and I have a list of references at the end of the PowerPoint I can share with you as well. DBT, especially, which if we think about borderline personality, I was talking to Christine earlier about how difficult that can be. Eating disorders, we've talked about that. But yes, these are some of the, especially the complex mental health issues that DBT has been kind of more effective than other things. So I find that very exciting. And then just again, practically for us as social workers in prevention of burnout, I went to a workshop early about resiliency and that kind of connection with mindfulness and increasing capacity to take on a lot of stress and to be resilient in our work. And again, there's just a couple references out of many. I mean, I would have 4 or 5 slides for you if I included everything. Okay, so what are some practices? We talked about a little bit of the theory coming out of Buddhist thought. I'm going to get into the more of the Christian thought soon, so don't worry. But I want to say it's very practical. And here's, I just wanted to share a very simple example of what I would call a mindful practice. So on particularly stressful days in practice or before the classroom, at a Zusa Pacific University, which never happens, right? Never. I make a mug of tea, and I'll carry that with me to the classroom. And in that mug, I just hold it, and I picture myself, and I'm like this mug, and I'm like, God, you are holding me. And I can feel the warmth, and I can feel your presence. And then as I sip the tea, I can feel that sensation. I can feel the warmth of the liquid going down my throat and into my stomach, and I receive your grace. I receive what I need from you today. And I can do all of that in 2 minutes. And it's just a quick practice that just kind of, for lack of a better term, really centers me. And that's just one quick example I wanted to share, but it is practical. It can be done in any setting. Imagine yourself at a hospital, and you've got lots of situations, you've got to tell a family member bad news. You know, this is something that you don't have to take out a book and look at the DSM-5 and get your workbook out and try to figure out what kind of treatment plan. This is what I think is helpful with mindfulness, is you can access it anytime. I'm not going to go through each of the biblical texts here, just for sake of time, because I do want to open up to questions. But these are some texts that I think about when I think about some of these other practices. Deep breathing, that's the verse that talks about God formed man, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the Psalms, it's about being mindful in his presence and his love. But there's so much, I think, in the Bible that really can help us think about and not just meditate, but really be attentive to our faith and can be enfolded in our practice, whether, again, personally or professionally. Any questions there? I just want to stop. Anyone have something similar that you could think about, like my mug of tea? Yes.
I think on days in practice when I'm really rushing from client to client or situation, taking a moment to, it sounds so silly, but going to the bathroom and really mindfully washing my hands and just like, you know, sort of absorbing like, oh, this is nice pink soap. it's just a very physical process and a very grounding process.
Absolutely.
And it's necessary to do after you go to the
bathroom. Yeah. But you made it into that nice thing.
So
thank you for sharing that. I don't think that's silly at all. I think that's great. And yes,
I think that when I think about mindfulness and the results that it does, sometimes my mind says, well, why doesn't just prayer do that for me? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is because when I pray, all the different things come to my mind that I want to ask for, and it makes me even a little bit more anxious. Mm-hmm. Now I have to then give all of those things, but it can be a long process because I think about a lot of things all at once.
Right.
And so to me, that's the difference between just prayer in general, if it's a asking kind of prayer, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I start asking for one thing, then I think of asking for a lot of things, and then it's just too busy then in there again.
Exactly. So, and you forget what you were originally going to ask for.
Right. So and so if I feel like this is focused through the Lord and to the Lord, then it's a perfect blend for me.
Yeah, great. I'm glad to hear that. It can be, absolutely. Any last thoughts or comments on this particular thing?
Yeah, I heard someone a while back talk about getting sun therapy, sun, wind, and air therapy. A lot of times when we're in our practice or classrooms or offices, we're inside and we're closed off from the natural light and natural elements. And so something I've started doing is to walk, to step outside and walk and actually kind of do a measure of gratitude. Thank you for the air. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for the birds. Thank you. How many thank yous can I get through before I go back to my office? And it just gives me that fresh air, fresh sun, and helps me kind of decompress.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A while back, I had a shoulder injury, a blocked shoulder, and so I did do stretching. And I found that during the stretching, that was a good time for me to run through things that I was grateful for, things, And because it served a double purpose for me, it was practical, so that really worked. But now I find I don't need to do the stretching anymore, but I do it every day because of all of the mindfulness benefits that came from it. So it was interesting. It was driven by another need, but when I saw the effect and impact it had on me, and now when I don't do it in those times, I can really feel a difference in how the rhythms of the day affect me.
That's great. Thank you. That sounds a lot. Rick and Kim, you both were reminding me a little bit about this sort of positive psychology as well, that's talking about gratitude. So there's a lot of, that's sort of another kind of take on mindfulness. And if some of you are, as clinicians, work in that realm, you could easily see how you can incorporate mindful walking or mindful stretching or mindful hand washing. Mindful teacher. I mean, you can get it. But please,
I'll be spreading a germ.
The point being, though, there's an infinite variety, right? There's no one way to do this. You could be, it's a place of creativity, which I think really gives you freedom as a clinician, as a social worker. So I think that can be very encouraging, especially as things are starting to feel staid, or especially in your client work where you want to do something a little bit out of the box, so to speak. Okay, so going back to your question a little bit, Joseph. So this is just a little image. I played around with the arrows, so they're not fantastic. I apologize. But if you think about just religious philosophy in general, we separate out Buddhism and Christianity. We really have a mindful practice in both areas, right? So I talked about Buddhism, the Four Noble Paths. Four Noble Truths. Out of that, the attainable Eightfold Path that leads to enlightenment. That's one side of mindful practice. That's one motivation for mindful practice. In Christianity, we have Christian truths that we can draw from the Old and New Testaments. We have this idea of a reunification with God, so being present with God, being able to connect with God, and forgiveness of sins. And I think there's something there about mindfulness and feeling forgiven sometimes that I would love to hear more if any of you thought of that and kind of put those two together. And then Jesus being the path of salvation versus, again, this idea of nirvana, and Jesus is one of many Buddhas. Obviously there's some difference religiously. But in the mindful practice itself, what I'd like to posit to you is that no one may see that externally, but you may know that's happening internally. So the practices can be similar, but you have a different motivation doing it. So, no one could tell I'm a Christian if I'm drinking tea or not, but I'm doing it in a Christian way. A Buddhist would have a different worldview, and a Buddhist would do it in a different way. It might look the same. We might be drinking the same tea, but it's going to be a different internal experience. And same with your clients, that, you can offer a framework that you're comfortable with, and with their consent, they may experience it differently. So I think it depends on how comfortable you are and whether you want to work just with Christians or people of different faiths. That's up to you. But you can come from a place of integrity for yourself as a Christian and have a practice that's, beneficial for everyone. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so Christian integration. I really like these people, and this is probably not fair because there's a lot of other people, but these are sort of my favorites. So think about how far back this goes. I mean, I like St. Hildegard. I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but St. Hildegard of Bingen? Uh-huh. Debingen, like that German, it kind of goes together. I don't know, Helen, is that right?
My uncle lives in Bingen.
Oh, that's great.
I think that's right.
That's right. Okay, there we go. Okay. I will take that. 1179. This isn't too shabby. And I bet there's...
It goes back further.
Even further.
It goes to the desert fathers.
The desert
fathers, yeah.
Yeah, St. Anthony of the desert.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to add them to that list.
Yeah, so it goes back, to 150.
That's wonderful.
Thank you for listening today to this 20-minute sample of NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. Just a reminder that you can access the full-length version of this and all NACSW podcasts at no cost by simply becoming a member of NACSW or by ordering a copy of this podcast at a reasonable cost on NACSW's online bookstore. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops, which provide CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, and our online continuing education program. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in to our podcast session today.